This week's producer was me, Andrew, and I'm in New York City. I'm with the August Sound Coalition. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
This week on Making...
And I'm in Santa Cruz. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Coming up next, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, the November 30th, 2006 show. Stay tuned.
Lisa listens closely to the timbre of my voice as it rises and it falls.
Don't go away. That is indeed dead air. We're going to be actually broadcasting something in a moment. Looks like the CD player isn't connected or isn't working for some reason. Let me check the... it could be we're not high enough. Let's give it another try, shall we? Well, we may have to go directly into the show without introduction, musical introduction, that is, but, hey, that gives us a little more show.
Lisa listens closely to the timbre of my voice as it rises and it falls.
Is Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and for the next 2 hours, I'm going to be talking about a variety of subjects, playing some interviews, trying to get the CD player to work, and also introducing my special guest this evening. I'll actually let her introduce herself. Hi there, special guest.
Hi, I'm the special guest.
You are the special guest.
And I am Weta.
You are Weta.
Weta, yes.
You are, in fact, the only Weta that I know of in Santa Cruz County.
I should be the only Weta.
And that's Y-W-X-X-W-E-T-T-E-H?
No, X-W-E-T-T-E, and that's a short version of my name for the lazy tongue.
Oh, well, what's the long name?
Weta Silhouette.
Weta, like silhouette?
Weta Silhouette.
Silhouette as in the French silhouette?
Somewhat, yeah.
Uh-huh. That's a Native American name?
First Nation.
First Nation name, if you will. Yeah. And you are from which tribe?
From Squamish Nation.
That's up in Washington?
That's up in Vancouver, British Columbia area.
Huh. And I know that I ran into you, oh gosh, a couple of weeks ago, and then I ran into you again at the HUF meeting. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. We kind of sit there shivering in the courtyard right outside the courthouse every Wednesday morning. Come on down and shiver with us if you want at 9:30 in the morning, and we actually provide hot coffee. Hey. And you were on your way to court. And that actually is what sparked this discussion and what really kind of sparked my interest in what you have to say and also perhaps your interest in being on the radio.
Yes.
So what's the story? What brought you to the courthouse yesterday?
I was looking at information on my files to see what's available, going through the family law facilitator to... They help me.
Hang on just a second. I think we're having a little trouble with your microphone here. Let me see what the deal is here. If you're actually plugged in. It looks like you are. Say something into the mic.
Say something over the mic.
Closer.
And is it working?
Get closer.
I need to get closer.
Well, I don't see you. Hello? Yeah, it doesn't look like...
Test.
I don't... Say something else.
Test.
We're checking you out on the... our monitor is having some problems here with some of the equipment. I don't know. Someone has been in here playing around with our equipment. Could have been a broadcaster. I don't know. I think we may have to actually share a microphone for you actually to be heard properly.
Okay.
But that's okay. So, I met you at court. And why were you in court?
I went to the courts to help... to help myself, to find out information. I wanted to see if I could let go of the commissioner that I have for the family law that I'm dealing with right now. Also, I was trying to get a 911 transcript, and I got nothing but the runaround.
Now, you're in court because of actually, we're talking child custody matter, right?
At this point, it is child custody. It started out with domestic violence.
And it also involves homelessness. It involves your 12-year-old daughter. It involves the failure of the police department to give you the records you need. And it sounds like it involves what sounds like an artificial and cruel separation from your child.
Yes, indeed. It had started out with a 20-day restraining order. And before that 20 days was up, my ex-husband found out about that, and they turned that into dissolution of marriage. I was kicked out of our family home with my daughter within 4 days. The judge ordered us to leave.
And so this began, you said, with a violent incident with your partner, who was also the other parent of the child?
Yes.
And you had been living together for a while?
Yes, we were married for as old as she is. It was 11 years. At that time, and she's 12 and a half now.
And then you had an incident of violence with this guy. Presumably, we're talking about a man.
Yes, and at that time, I still am dealing with the back injury, but that the domestic violence was dropped, but I'm still dealing with my back issues right to this day.
Can I ask you what kind of violence it was?
He wouldn't go out and just push me, punch me or anything to show bruises, but he did shove me and push me, and the police officer at that time, I don't know if I can say his name, but I can. Officer Arjavec, he told me that...
Arjavec,
yes.
We know Arjavec, unfortunately. Go ahead.
And he said he was going to arrest my husband at that time, and I came back and I was surprised that it was still in the home. And he said that he had every right to stop my behaviors.
Arjavec did?
Yes, he did. And because of what he wrote, there was nothing further to go on.
You were about to roast the 12-year-old in the oven, possibly. You were planning to bomb the city. What behaviors was your spouse stopping, or your partner stopping?
It was an ongoing co-parenting conflict at that time, and he kept saying, "Oh, I'll do it later." But to show a good example with co-parenting, a child is more willing to do chores around the house if everybody's in harmony with it. And the night had ended, and I says, "Well, here's your other option. You can either sleep with the food on your bed or do the dishes like you said."
I used to do that, actually. We used to do that with people in the house who wouldn't do the dishes. We'd put them in the people's beds, and they get a chance to get a sort of up-close acquaintance with the dishes. But apparently your spouse didn't go for that.
No, he shoved me and pushed me, and the officer asked me how it could happen. And in that brief moment, I was holding a frying pan. I was fearful that he was going to hit me with the frying pan. And I said, "You either have a choice of getting it yourself together or in letting me go. Now you decide." And that's when he shoved me down, and now I have a lumbar sprain.
So you were holding a frying pan, and the officer interpreted that as being aggressive behavior on your part?
When I tried to show him, it happened really quick. So when I tried to recall at the moment what happened, I did the best I could, and he just reported that he didn't see how that I could get hurt, and there was no injuries. I did have bruises, but he dismissed them.
There were visible bruises?
Yes, there was visible bruises, and I'm still not able to get those pictures, neither.
And who took the pictures?
Officer Arjavec.
Arjavec, yes. Officer Arjavec is, I believe, currently the defendant in several lawsuits for police brutality, at least one involving, I believe, James Ney, a homeless activist up in Felton, interestingly enough, whom Arjavec reportedly assaulted in the Felton Fair shopping area near the Safeway, demanding he leave the area. And when James Ney said to him, "No, but give me a ticket and I'll go to court on the issue with you," he was assaulted by Arjavec. And that's happened apparently to somebody else too. But when did this encounter with Officer Arjavec happen?
It was three Christmases ago. The injury occurred on December 11th, and I waited for a moment so I could report it without my daughter around.
December 11th, 2003, 2004?
Yeah, 2003.
And at that point, what happened after that?
We went to court. I had the restraining order. And he even told my ex-husband that I was having a restraining order. So that's when he started getting an attorney and turning it to dissolution of marriage. That's how it got dismissed.
It being a potential assault charge against your husband? Or?
Yeah, it just got dismissed and then turned into the dissolution of marriage. My ex-husband got everything, all the trust fund money, control of everything. And my daughter and I got kicked out. He didn't pay all the child support.
What kind of child support was mandated?
It was $1,300 a month for me to live off. And I, with the 4 days to find a place to live in Santa Cruz County, to find a place to live in 4 days is ridiculous to ask somebody to do.
When did this happen? When did this 4-day deadline come up?
It happened about July
of
2004.
About half a year after the incident?
Yeah.
And so, if I understand this properly, you initially wanted to have your husband prosecuted for assault.
Yes.
Arjavec declined to file a report, and the DA declined to prosecute?
Yes, and the DA. And I also had videos and 911 calls of my daughter being forced to be with him and saying that he has hurt her. And
who was saying this?
My daughter. There was a nine. She was forced to see him, and she kept denying to go. But because of the court papers, she had to. Even to this day, she has to go with her dad when she refuses. I've tried to get help through the Victim's Witness Program, and I can't seem to get any help anywhere. And nobody wants to look at the past stuff that I have. That I got videoed when. And I have bruises on my face from him, and they say, well, we can't do anything about the past stuff.
So let's turn to the point where you became homeless, because that's a kind of a focus we have here. You became homeless in July of 2004?
Last year.
2005.
Yeah, 2005. I found a place to stay in Salinas, and it didn't work out, and I found it easier to stay in Santa Cruz instead of traveling back and forth with the courts and...
How many days a week do you have custody of what's your daughter's name?
That I would not say, okay. Because her name is more unique than I.
Okay. Well, your 12-year-old daughter.
Yeah. She'll be 13 in March.
Yeah, actually, you were going to bring her in at one point, and she was actually going to be part of the show. Right?
Yes. There may be another opportunity.
So, now, of course, we haven't contacted your spouse, your ex-spouse. We haven't heard his side of the story. I haven't contacted Officer Arjavec, and this is all sort of full disclosure here so that you're hearing one side of this story, but you know you can certainly make whatever judgments you want based upon your own experiences in the situation, your own sense of the credibility of this person here. And you can also give a call if you have questions or comments at 247-3772. My interest in this case has to do with you say that first of all you had four days to come to deal with a housing situation, and this was in 2004 or 2005. I'm still a little bit confused.
2000, and we've been dealing with a sweat tooth for 2 years already through the courts. Last November is when she was taken away a year ago from me, October 31st, around that time.
And that was because of a housing problem that developed in the summer.
Yeah.
Of 2005, and a year before that you'd gotten the divorce and then only had 4 days to resolve housing, which you were able to do, but then a year later you were in trouble?
Yes, because I've always been a stay-home mom, and that's what I did, is raise our child.
What kind of work? I know I've seen you now as a working person. I've seen you engaging in a lot of, house cleaning, housekeeping work, and you're also you're a craftsperson?
I like to do a lot of beading. I am known to look after people with disabilities, mental disabilities, and that is my profession.
You cater to divergent radio talk show hosts?
Oh, yes.
We won't get into that. So let me see if I understand this then. So there were some complaints about how you were taking care of your daughter. And that had to do with the fact that you lost your housing in the summer of 2004?
Yes, and I...
2005, I should say.
I did get a notice to leave, and she made it so difficult where it was too... Already with what we're dealing with, it was just too stressful to stay, so I decided just to leave for the health of both of us.
This was from Watsonville or Salinas?
From Salinas, yes. And we ended.
So how stressful, let me just ask.
It was very stressful. This woman made life really difficult for us when we were already going through a major transition in our lives. I ended up at the shelter here in Santa Cruz, and I tried to get into the Reveille shelter, and when I asked about housing, I was told that I was juggling too many things in my life. These are the precise words. I was juggling too many balls in my life, and I have to get my life straight.
Clean up any problems. Yeah, what specific problems are you? Do you have a drug problem?
No, I'm clean and sober.
You have? Are you a psychiatrically labeled loony who runs out during the full moon and beats up strangers?
Well, that's what my ex-husband tried to claim through the courts, but no, there's no proof of it.
History of psychiatric hospitalization?
No, not at all.
You take psychiatric medication?
No, I don't.
I'm trying to think of some. I don't see any needle marks on your arms, but, you know, that could be. We have to do a full physical examination of you. I'll do that off air, folks. You were denied access to the Reveille family shelter, the $5 million family shelter at the corner of Coral Street and Highway 9, which is, we've been told, usually half empty because their standards are so high, on the same evenings that emergency shelter in the ISSP Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and which now includes the Armory, on freezing cold nights like tonight, has space for only about 160 people at max. Actually, I think the Armory maxes out at 75, and they cram more people in, but 75 means it's full. That's what I was told by, I believe, Director Ken Cole several years ago. And, of course, there are about, 40 to 60 spaces on the floor of Church's rotating church program, which is due to close because the funding is not there to transport people to the ISSP program. What did you use the ISSP program, the emergency shelter program, you and your daughter?
Yes, we did. I was there, in actual fact, for 10 days. Within that 10 days that I was at the shelter doing what we call the church groups, within that 10 days, first priority was to get food and shelter for my daughter and I, and then I got her in school, which took about a week to even just find a school to get her into, and, you know, the waiting list and all the protocol to sign her up for school. So it was actually only 10 days we were there, and on the 10th day, my daughter was taken out of her school without my knowledge, and then the papers were served to me. So we both didn't know what was going on, and she's been with her dad since.
What's the nature of the legal change that happened, and why did it happen in terms of at least the public pretext?
Well, I did find an attorney for $7,000, that because the law says that there's a family law code that he would have to pay for an attorney. So for $7,000, what I got for that $7,000 was custody of our daughter, and we moved to Salinas.
This was after the divorce in 2004.
Well, yeah. We're still not divorced.
This was after the separation.
Yeah, we're still separated.
You went to Salinas then. In 2005, you became homeless in July of 2005 when you left Salinas?
Yes. And hoping to find a place that was...
About 6 months you were homeless?
I was only actually homeless for those 10 days.
So you had some other housing after you left Salinas?
It just happened to fall in my lap. A neighbor found out what happened, and she let me stay at her place.
For a number of months?
Yes.
And you had to leave?
I had to leave because I was across the street from my ex-husband. It was comforting for my daughter, but it got to be too much because I was always being watched. So, you know, just those 10 days, and I don't know, I tried to keep it on the down low that I was at the shelter because I'm supposed to say where I'm going, but if I don't know where I'm going, then there's nothing to say.
And the court wanted to know. The court wanted to have an address where you could be reached.
Yeah, but I thought I could get into the Reveille shelter right away. I thought with all the stuff that I was going through, that I, for myself and having a child, that I would be able to get in.
Did you get any indications one way or the other in a preliminary manner that encouraged you in this belief?
I don't understand.
In other words, did you talk to them and say, oh, yeah, you could probably get in, and then later they said, nope, you can't?
Well, no, and I asked to talk to somebody above them, and their first comment is like, I'm sure you want me to change my mind, but I won't, and come back in 6 months. But that was too late. I already lost custody of our daughter. And
the person who was doing the decision making said, "I think you want me to change my mind, but I won't." Or
yeah.
They weren't specific about the kinds of problems they had that made you an unfit applicant at that time.
No, they didn't specify anything.
Name of the person who made this decision?
Peg, her name is.
Her name was Peg. I think I've met Peg, actually, but I'm not sure. Did you appeal this decision to Ken Cole, the executive director of the ISSB?
No, I didn't. I was going through so much traumatic stuff and with the courts and everything. I had enough to deal with, and I'm just coming out of that at this point in my life.
I know you were still working on it. That was one of the occasions I met you at yesterday. Let me understand, though, that the key issue here, why did the court decide that your husband had the right to take the child?
That's what I'd like to know, because being homeless doesn't mean that you can have your child taken from you. And at that time, I did get a job. Oh, in that 10 days, I got myself a job in a group home. And it didn't pay a lot. It was $8 an hour, but also I worked evenings, so I was only allowed to have my daughter one weekend a month because of my job, and I worked evenings.
After your child was taken from you?
That's after, and I fought till just recently, last August, to have that changed. With my job, they found out about my back injuries, and they laid me off last March, so I've been out of work since then.
You've still been receiving child support or spousal support or something of that effect?
Yeah, I get child support and spousal support, but each time we go, I get less time with our daughter and less support.
So, did you actually have a hearing on this issue as to whether the child could be taken from you, or did just suddenly somebody show up with a court order? What happened?
I found out through the school when she was taken, and the principal gave me the paperwork. Not even an officer gave it to me.
But you weren't given a chance for an adversarial hearing. You were just, the child was seized.
Yes, indeed.
And you know the name of the judge who signed the order?
The commissioner.
Commissioner Irwin Joseph?
Yes.
Chunk Justice Joseph, as I like to call him.
Yes.
Did you ever have an opportunity at any future point after that point, which I guess was in November of 2005?
I try to do the best I can by going by myself. It's court. I find it very intimidating and basically one-sided, and a lot of things that were untruth. And I'm learning. They call it throwing a herring on the trail type thing. And they did a lot of that, and it just would throw me off. And things that I did really want to speak about, I felt I didn't get a chance, or I felt I didn't get heard, and asked many times to have 50-50 custody, and asked many times for our daughter to speak in court, and that hasn't happened.
Now, when you say you asked, you did this in front of the judge, and what was the judge's response when you made these requests?
We don't have children in the courts. Somewhat to that effect, but she is 13 years old at this point now. She is.
You asked for a decision regarding a change in the custody. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? He doesn't deal with children issues, or what?
That she's still a child, but she's adamant about what she wants, and she tells many people. Even
so you told him that this was her desire, and that was why you felt you wanted her to have her half the time.
Yes, and with the mediation, she was very defiant, and it was put on me why she was behaving the way she was. But I wasn't even there. I was unaware that she was going to mediation. Mm-hmm. And that started the whole ball rolling when I wasn't aware she was doing mediation. She was very defiant, didn't want to talk to the mediator, so that, "I don't know you, I don't need to talk to you." And you know, kind of like that, and was not listening to her dad. But they all put it on me and about the alienation thing. And I have never alienated her father, no matter what happened between us. I even stayed the Christmas time when just after I got injured, because I think she needs to be with her father.
Well, some would construe, for example, this radio show to be a form of alienating your daughter from her father, or being a critical voice with respect to the father. And I probably should have warned you about this before you got on the air, that it's possible that, you know, this radio show could be used, as in the twisted minds of some, as evidence that you are, oh, I don't know, hostile to a mediation. But you certainly, I mean, I don't see it that way myself, but of course they can twist things around as they wish. But the purpose that I'm doing here is to get your information out to the community and find out if any other women or men with children are finding this kind of situation happening where they aren't informed, their children are just taken. It may have something to do. You say it didn't have anything to do with the homeless status. You look like you want to say something else first.
I think because I was homeless and he found out, that's why he got her. I also see through the court mediation, if you're standing alone with no money and no attorney, and the other party does, what they say, and if you don't know the protocol of how to deal with things, and sometimes there's statutes of limitations, that's what I have found over time. That's also what's prevented me from being heard. I've done the best I can, like I've heard file a motion, and there's certain protocols to do, but I find those protocols out a bit late to help.
Now, I know that there was a... Sorry.
And then the mediation, a lot of it was untrue. So how, you know, where do you start with things that are not true? And how much is like what I call the he said, she said game that doesn't work in life?
Well, I guess my question, though, is first, I mean, have you been able to look at the file? Because there obviously has to have been a reason that your spouse put down that said, this is the reason we're taking, I'm requesting, was it sole custody or primary custody of the child, physical custody of the child, because of what? And did you see any documents that had those statements on it?
Well, he used to say that that I was mentally ill and not taking my pills, and I have written proof of certain things that is actually written. There was supposed to be a psychological evaluation. I keep asking for it. I actually keep begging for it because I would love to have.
Seen the document that actually he filed requesting the custody, he be given physical custody?
I have. The only document I saw is what the principal had given me when she was taken from me.
Did that document contain specifics about why the husband, why he claimed and why the court found that you were not a fit mother, or you could not retain physical custody, or that he was a better custodian?
I didn't see anything to that.
Have you tried to access the file?
Yes, I have.
What happens when you try to do that?
I have to sign for it, show my ID, and that's where I was yesterday. But the file is so huge, I have to know my dates and go back and do my own personal research before I go back into my file.
I'm sure that somewhere in that file you can probably find... This would be of interest to me, the specifics that he claimed. He said, you mentioned he said things to you, didn't take your pills, although you tell me you weren't taking psychiatric medication. What pills is he talking about?
No pills. He always tried to convince me that I was crazy.
You needed to take pills.
Yeah, that I needed to take them.
And just exactly what's the nature of your insanity?
Oh, I stand up for myself, I guess.
You're an uppity woman.
Uppity, yeah.
Uppity woman syndrome. Yeah, I've heard about that. It's a problem in this community. I've seen too many sad cases of that, and you clearly are a terminal case. We're talking with?
Weta.
We're talking with Weta, and I'm Robert. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. It's nearing 6:30, and if you want to give a call and have a question, make a comment of your own, perhaps you had, you know, your child taken away, or you feel that it's quite appropriate that children be taken away, give us a call, 427-3772, and I'm actually going to see if we actually have a working mic. Say something into that other mic. You want to see what's happening?
Is this one working now? Hello.
Looks like it is. I think.
Yay!
It's working.
All
right. That works when you turn the mic on. It's always important to use the on-off switch, I found in such cases. So, go ahead, Weta. You got a comment.
I also would like to mention that I feel that we all have a voice and our own opinion, and they are our own opinion, and I believe everybody has a right to their own opinion. We don't always have to agree. So that's how I personally feel. And also I find I chose to be on the air to talk about this because it's more of a personal matter for me, not just between my daughter, our daughter and I. It also goes way back. I see it as money, power, and greed through the court system.
So actually, maybe I would say you're saying it's more than a personal matter. It's something that perhaps other people have experienced, or that that's a widespread phenomenon in this society.
And I think in the county of Santa Cruz. And I think there's a lot of people. This is my opinion. I feel that there's a lot of people who don't know the court system and who are dealing with it by themselves, like I am.
So. Wow.
And they like to decide what is better, the child's best interest, but they don't really know the child except for the parents themselves. You know.
So there were no unusual claims. If I were to go down and look in your file just to double-check your story, I wouldn't find that there were instances where it has been claimed and documented that you engaged in physical abuse or psychological abuse toward the child.
I myself, no.
There's no such. The police have never been called to your house by him or by somebody else regarding your relationship with the child.
That's correct.
There weren't complaints about how you were treating the child while you had physical custody of her until this, they came to the school and just abruptly took her away in November a year ago.
Yes, I was their primary caregiver since birth.
And so, did you have any mutual friends who possibly go between you and your ex-partner who might have given you some insight as to what went down? I mean, do you have somebody who's sort of a courier or someone who talks to both of you?
Well, I let a lot of those go because they ended up taking through the separation and they didn't like it. I spoke my mind and go, you take what you can from this marriage and separation, and now I see you're biased, so I can't have you in my life. There's only one person now that stays cordial between the both of us.
And has that person given you any insight into why this happened when it did? I mean, I can imagine I understand, but what prompted your ex-partner to say, I want physical custody? Had he been trying previously to do this, or was this a sudden decision he made? Did he suddenly decide, you know, he wanted to, you know, introduce her to Scientology? I don't know. What came up that, what specific, you know, concern did he have?
Well, I've always been the primary caregiver, and it's funny how just things turn around in the last year. He seems to be the good everything, which is good, you know. It's just that it would have been nice for it to happen since the day she was born.
So, but you are still trying to regain physical custody of, and she's trying to get back with you, right?
Yes, she is.
I mean, is there any chance of a sort of a mediated understanding where you split custody and you have it 50-50 or something like that?
I've asked for that, yeah.
And what's the response been?
It has not gone to 50-50 yet.
Who denied it? Or what?
It just hasn't changed. I seem to get a little bit more time. I get her 3 weekends a month instead of 1 weekend a month. But my Tuesday sleepovers were taken away. And, well, I'm grateful I'm First Nations because we do Native American drumming. And, well, you know.
Now, is that an element? I know that here in Santa Cruz we had a large controversy, and I know I was there for some of the court controversy involving a case some years ago of a woman whose baby was seized by the courts. I don't know, had something to do with her, where marijuana was found, and that's a deadly drug, we know, and can seriously injure children and adults permanently, blind them, and also cause hair to grow on their palms and faces. But there was a defense raised, and an interesting and rather effective defense that involved people from out of town, involving her Native American status. Now, have you ever raised that issue?
Yes, I have. I have had my nations send papers to the court, my percentage of blood and our daughter's percentage of blood. There's something called the Dakota law, but I can't seem to find it right now.
And have you ever actually had a hearing on that issue in terms of...
No, I haven't. I don't know how to deal with it by myself.
So, in essence, perhaps you're saying you'd like some legal help.
Yes.
If anybody wants to step forward, any should we say, beneficent attorneys, or should we say, eager beaver legal workers, or just moms, or support people who have been through this process of trying to support a mother who is trying to either regain custody of her child or share custody of her child.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to give a call, you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. I will pass on this information to you, Weta, and we'll see if actually anybody calls. Your comment.
I also was speaking earlier that is more of a personal issue. It cuts to the core, not just like what I'm talking about now. I see it as oppression that's passed down. I like to educate people. I am a 60 scoop baby. And that's
60 scoop baby?
A 60 scoop baby.
Explain to us what that is.
In Canada, we call it 60 scoop. That's when the government came in and took us Native children away from our Native families and we lost our cultural ways.
This was in the 60s?
In the
60s.
1960s. 60s, 70s, and... Late
the change in how Native, how First Nation children And that's a phrase I think is mostly used in Canada rather than the United States, or is it used here too?
I like the terminology used throughout Turtle Island. I think it would be good to be known.
Turtle Island is?
It's all in North America.
And were you, you're an American citizen?
I am First Nations. I am in what they call the Bill C-31, and that's because of the fur trading in the 1700s. There was a treaty signed, and because of my ancestry, I have no border.
So do Canadian and United States authorities recognize this as you wander back and forth over the border?
Well, here I really have to struggle, like with my food stamps and that. I have to go and educate them.
Now, do you actually, have you crossed over to the border of Canada? I mean, where were you born?
I was born in Canada, eh?
So in essence, the Canadian authorities regard you as a Canadian citizen?
Yes.
And the U.S. authorities probably regard you as a Canadian citizen?
When I show them a status card, yeah.
You have a Canadian passport?
No, I have an Indian status card.
I know that in the United States part of America, there is supposedly treaties with sovereign Indian nations. That is to say, I don't know, Indians have been relegated to vestigial dumps and, tossed off and essentially genocided away on these reservations. But supposedly they have some kind of tribal sovereignty, and that's also the case in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do Indians in Canada have Canadian passports, or how do they get in and out of the United States? What kind of procedure you've been back and forth over the border?
Oh, many times.
And
yes.
And what kind of process is used there?
What kind of process? I have what they call a status card. It's to prove that you have 50% or more Indian blood. That helps you cross.
And of
the border.
Course, you get a blood test every time you go through.
Oh yeah.
And you are a known terrorist, right? So enemy combatant, perhaps. We have a place for people like you. It's called the Uppity Woman Compound. So does that status, did that affect in any way this whole case? Did the issue of your extraterritorial rights as a member of a sovereign nation in Canada have any impact on the court proceedings? Was it ever raised? You said you had an attorney who squeezed $7,000 out of you?
Yes. And then she wanted $2,000 more, and then I went to the law library and said, how come you didn't help me under this family code and this family code and this family code? Because I found out about Matthew and Binder and doing my own research, and then she dropped me like a hot potato.
Name of the attorney?
Monica.
Monica.
Vantock.
Vantock. I think I've heard that name somewhere. Monica Vantock, what are you doing with the 7 G's? That's the question. How many hours did you put in for the 7 G's?
That I'd have to go back on.
Hundreds of hours, dozens of hours, five hours.
She was with me for maybe a couple months.
Uh-huh. And did you get any palpable result out of this 7 G's?
I was told not to bring up the domestic violence. It's been dropped, so don't do anything. I'm going, wait, I still have a back injury. What do you mean? So I was basically told to backtrack is really hard. And
now, you hired her for what purpose? This was before your child was taken away from you.
Yeah, and then she told me not to go to the shelter.
And the purpose of hiring her was to contest the possible taking away of the child? Did you then know that your spouse was trying to take away the child?
I had her up to the point till I became homeless. I was advised not to go to the shelter. And I'm going, well, where am I supposed to go?
Did she offer to take you into her house, perhaps?
No.
After all, 7 G's, that's pretty, that should pay for at least some of the rent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't offer to do that.
No.
She didn't offer to put you up in a motel?
No.
That sounds like quite an attorney you picked up, although perhaps not as unusual as one might think. Any comments from our audience out there? Are you listening? Are you awake? Do you give a damn about this? Let me know. 427-3772, if you want to call in. We're talking with Weta about... I guess one of the aspects is what happens when you become homeless and you're in the middle of a child custody dispute, watch out. Although we don't have any clear indications that was necessarily a factor, although the attorney advised you, Monica
Vantock
advised you best not to become homeless, perhaps build a home in the sky or burrow into into a building, rob a bank. What was her suggestion how to avoid being homeless?
I didn't know where to go, so I just followed what I needed to do.
She didn't want you to go to the homeless shelter.
Yeah.
So you must have hired her for some purpose. What was the purpose you hired her for?
Well, I did. My ex-husband did have to pay for her fees out of our trust fund.
Right, but why did you hire her? What did you want from her?
I wanted custody of our daughter.
And previously, well, you had custody until November of 2005.
Yes.
And you hired her before that.
Before that, yes.
So you had been warned that custody was being threatened?
I'm not sure what you
mean. In other words, did you hire her in order to make sure that you kept custody? Because you had custody.
Yeah, I was given custody, and our daughter and I were kicked out of our family home. And then I got an attorney to try to keep that.
To keep
custody.
So you anticipated that there will be a problem, and that's why you asked for the attorney.
Yes.
So could it have been that your ex-spouse decided, she's spending all our money on these attorneys, this wasteful woman, she's probably filling the kid with candy and buying her treats on the sly, maybe Indian trinkets, possibly we have to... Now, I'm just wondering why did you decide you needed help with an attorney? Because did you hear that this was being challenged, your custody, or did you thought, I'm losing my home, I better watch out, it's going to be challenged? What was your...
I just knew I need an attorney because to stand up in court alone and when the other party.
But
has
why did you think you were even going to court? What gave you what? I mean,
because of the domestic violence, and then it turned to the dissolution of marriage.
But your marriage had already been dissolved the year before.
Yeah.
So why did you need an attorney after that?
Because I got kicked out of our home, and I didn't know how to deal with the court system.
But what in the court system did you need to deal with? In other words, what? Nothing came up in the court system until you were advised in November that suddenly the child was being taken away from you, or did you have some previous, did you have some issue between, you know, in the months before November that you needed this attorney for?
Just to keep custody, and then once I was homeless, I didn't have any help.
You felt custody was being challenged, even though you hadn't received any particular notice that it was being challenged?
Yes.
You feared it was going to be challenged?
Yeah. So the whole system is fearful when you're standing alone.
Right, right. I'm just wondering, I guess the thing that precipitated it for you was you're losing your residence.
Yeah.
Losing your home in Salinas.
Yes.
And then you were living in kind of on borrowed time in your friend's house.
Yeah.
And then you felt, okay, well, that's, I guess that covers it. I mean, what I would need to do to understand the situation more would be to look at the file and see what I could glean from it, though I'm no expert in family law. And I seem to forget as much as I remember about these cases, probably because they seem very tangled to me. And also, of course, I have the problem that I'm only seeing one side of it, but it's an important side of it. And if anybody wants to comment on it, now's the chance. 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio, and it's an opportunity to talk about it. While you're pondering calling in, I'm having a little trouble with the CD player. Obviously, I'm... missing something here about the CD player. I don't know what it is I'm missing, but I'm missing something. And let me try actually see if I can actually get a little music on the second CD player, the second deal here. Let's see if we actually have an opportunity to get a little musical break. Looks like it's playing, but it's not broadcasting. Although my voice is going out there, I can tell that. At least it seems to be. I'm picking it up on my radio. So I'm going to play while we're waiting for... actually taking a breather here. I'm going to play a little more from Halloween, actually. Let's go back to the good old days. Some of you heard some of this already, but this is actually part of the tape that I haven't played yet. Chord here.
Keep your eyes on those lights.
A little difficult. I apologize for
that. Isn't it light? Manhattan is singing just for you.
Mm.
City will be
wow.
Where I'm
okay.
Not
We have a caller, Saved by the Caller. Maybe this will be helpful here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Weta.
I'm a little confused. You're saying that your music is not playing, but it is playing?
Oh, it is.
I'm hearing it on the radio, and you're talking over the music, and we can barely hear you.
Okay, actually, it's interesting. We can hear you through the earphones, but we can't hear you on the monitor here.
Okay, looks like you got some mix-ups with the sound, but you are getting your music on the air right now. So,
okay.
Yeah, well, it looks like now that I'm talking, it's off.
Well, that's good news. And if I can figure out why the monitor...
Yeah, even the first time, the music was on, but you didn't know it was on.
And I think I just figured it out.
All right, well, maybe that helped just to know what was going on the other side.
Thank you, caller, and keep tabs on us, because if you don't, I don't know who will.
Yeah, it was hard to tell what you were saying your problem was, but I just thought I'd clarify it. I'm happy it helped.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
So we actually do have music, and I apologize for the confusion, my confusion. It has to do with probably needing a little remedial work, probably a lot of remedial work in the studio here to determine which button should be turned up in which direction. Let's have a little music here while we're waiting for me to kind of regain my sanity, and you possibly can check this out.
Lisa listens closely to the timbre of my voice as it rises and it falls. Patchy Christmas sentiment, bits and pieces all she gets, but at least I called it odd. She is sitting in a crowded subway car, standing in a parking lot behind some bar. Look outside, all Manhattan is dancing for you. Keep your eyes on those lights. Isn't it like Manhattan is singing just for you? That city will be where I'm not tonight.
That's the music of Cole Whalen, Cole's Whalen, from her album G-Baby. She's a musician you might have seen downtown on Saturday evening. Speakers were set up. I don't know if she had a permit, but she was cranking out some strong sounds right across from the Cinema 9. And who knows, she may even come in the studio at some point and do some singing in here, although it's pretty elevator music stuff. I liked her sound on the streets, and that's the reason I'm playing it, because she was on the streets of Santa Cruz. And I'm glad when people hit the streets. Although I'd rather hear music that's really more directly about what's going on in the day-to-day and the down and dirty. So I want to thank that caller for calling in. And I'm going to play a little something from Peru and get back to you. Don't go away. And call in if you'd like, 427-3772. That was Inca Maru, Tu Orgullo by Huaño, a Peruvian group. And let's turn now back a few weeks to Halloween and a few more interviews from the street as to what was happening there. Halloween came up, the subject of Halloween came up again at the last city council meeting, and I may be playing some of that on Sunday when I come back, or possibly even this evening if I reach that point. A lot of us felt, I for one, that there was kind of a police state mentality going on downtown in terms of how the police were dealing with the citizenry. Not that it was unusually brutal, but it was very militarized and seemed to involve an unnecessarily large number of cops and a kind of a show of force, even when there was nothing happening that required a show of force, sort of the intimidate people into behaving properly approach. When we're talking about a celebratory evening, I have talked about on the air the city council's approach when they passed this triple fine zone, making it three times as costly to break any minor infraction rules involving parking involving having an open container if you're a poor homeless person, being drunk in public. Of course, none of this has much relation to the reality of why people drink on these occasions and whether you really want to deter drinking, let's say, by closing down liquor stores for the evening or something like that, which I don't know what the ramifications of that are, but that would be the basis of a serious effort, and I actually brought that up at City Council on Tuesday. But here's some more discussion of perceptions, not just by myself, by other people downtown, of the police presence in Santa Cruz on Halloween evening.
Hey, we're talking with Paul Marcelin Sampson and
Joe Marcelin Sampson.
Now, what's happening, you two? What's you have some thoughts about our helicopter festivities?
Well, we live downtown, and since about 6 or 7, there's been a helicopter circling with a searchlight going and surveying what's going on downtown. And it's connecting
us. Well, this could be a riot zone. We are at war, you know.
Well, it feels as though we're living in a police state. It's a big waste of money to ruin a fun event.
A cynical view. These are officers of the law defending our freedom.
Oh, right. Well, if some of the businesses would actually stay open and give people something to do, then, you know, maybe we wouldn't be milling about the way we are. But
well, the crowds are getting thicker. I've only seen one instance of violence here tonight, and that was resolved by the two individuals in CERN. So, of course, my eyes are not everywhere. Luckily, the police's eyes appear to be here, there, and pretty much
what you don't see, they will not miss.
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen.
Have a good night.
You too. I'm here at the corner of Soquel in front. We're standing with a man with, looks like, a video camera, and across the street, parked in front of the parking lot of New Leaf, on the blocked-off front street are, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, or maybe 5, 6 police officers in one squad car?
Oh, no, there was 12.
There were 12? What did you see? You saw a man intoxicated in a bar, and you actually recorded it on your video camera?
Yeah.
And did you see any abusive behavior by police, or you just feel it was
No, it's like he walked out of the bar, he's drunk, and they jumped on him.
Was he causing any problems?
No.
Because it's not illegal to be drunk in public, provided you can take care of yourself.
I can go sit in the Acapulco, and I can drink in public.
But if you have an open container, watch out.
Oh, but wait a minute. Look, right here inside the door, it says, if you enter this premises with an open container, but how can I get drunk in a bar without an open container?
Osmosis, Brad. We're talking with a person. What exactly? You have a little character with a skull on top of your hat. You are dressed with, you're a skeleton. And we're getting photographed even as we speak. But you say that you have taken this outfit simply to avoid...
I'm in the Day of the Dead costume.
Right.
With a little skull on my head that dances to La Vida Loca. And I'm making friends with all the gang members.
What about this blue gang with all the guns over here?
The blue gang isn't as friendly, but the Latino gangs definitely get it. And I'm hoping to create a little peace in the neighborhood because there's a very mixed crowd down here, and I can understand why the cops might be wary because some people are definitely here and not wanting to smile, and that tells you they got other things on their minds. So let's try and make them smile.
So you are one of the true peacekeepers, oh, skeletonic one.
I'm working
one.
my skeleton off. I already worked my skin off. I already worked my skin off down to the bones. Bare bones here.
Bare those bones anytime you want with me, skeletona.
And keep them laughing.
Thank you.
Yes, live in la vida loca.
In la vida
loca. Let's get a recording of that.
Coming from her hat.
It's la vida loca.
Of course, to make sure la vida loca does not get out of control, we have 7 officers on one side of the street in front of the Pacific Cookie Company, and I guess now it's been reduced to only 3 officers on this side of the street. Thank you.
Yes, on Major K, and we'll keep living La Vida Loca in Santa Cruz.
Gracias. And what should I call you? Loquita?
Loquita.
Gracias, Loquita. So Mr. Peanut is walking by, and we have a what appears to be a house, some people acting as a house in the middle of the street. And is this man a pimp? I'm not sure. Many different folks. You, sir, who are you tonight?
A guy from the Disco Dude.
You are Disco Dude. Thank you. Yes. And what do you represent? Who are you tonight?
I'm a Beatrice Kiddo from Kill Bill.
And for those who don't know what the hell that is, explicate. Explain your partner. What's going on?
She is a movie character who kicks ass.
Yeah.
I'm watch my step.
That's right. Actually.
All right. Well, I'm going to
keep.
We may need your help in defending us against the blue gang with the guns over there.
I have my samurai sword here. I'll be able to.
All right. We may have to call upon you later.
Yeah. Just let me know.
All right then. Well, thank you and your yellow outfit.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
All right. You too. And again, we have a V-shaped phalanx of police officers. Looks like the same crew as before. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and two behind them. And folks are kind of parading past. We have a woman with a drum, a Batman. Any comments for the free radio?
Free radio. Batman supports non-commercial educational radio and such.
Thank you, Batman. Sir, what are you?
I'm a marching band.
You are, in fact, a marching band?
I am a marching band, yes, sir.
All right, well, play a song. And what are you, madam?
I'm a gypsy.
You are a gypsy.
I'm going to tell you your fortune.
Very well, let's hear it. You've whipped out your crystal ball.
I've got my crystal ball here. I think that you're going to have a fantastic evening tonight.
You better be right, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Would the ghost like some candy? Ghost, would you like some candy?
I already took one.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
There's a man in a blue trench coat coming right after me right now with a firearm. Can you please?
Well, you look like you pay my salary. I'll go on for it.
And the officer is taking care of that. What kind of an officer are you, sir?
I don't know. They just gave me this baton here.
Police to serve and protect the establishment.
Before I just hit them.
I see. Well, you know, you've got to protect yourself and those around you.
Yes, sir. You might be poor.
No. I'm a wealthy man. I'll show you my wallet.
All right.
Thank you. What are you, sir? You have a strange-looking hat on.
I'm the head priest of Joyism, the new religion.
Joy, and what exactly is your doctrine?
It's a very simple religion. We have 600 pages in our Bible, but it only has one word, and the word is joy.
Joy. So aren't they being a little repetitive? Joy, 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 joy. Is that a little boring? I'm getting bored.
It only has one word.
Yes.
One word, that's
one word.
It. One word in the whole book.
Yes.
Yeah.
Joy.
Yes.
It sounds like a detergent. Now, what is this?
It's that simple to understand.
You have some detergent with you? What is that box?
These are books.
Joy books?
No. I haven't worked on joy books yet.
Would you like some candy to go with your joy?
It'd be very kind. Thank you very much. I like it. Good job.
All right.
Thank you.
So here we have these questionable poets of Orion. Here's a man in a clown suit. Oh, at last they found you. You know, I was afraid they finally got you. Now, what were you doing? Littering?
I was just, you know, I fell down and they just kind of threw handcuffs on me.
Well, I'm sure it was the right thing. These were men in blue. There's officers over there, perhaps.
You know, just trip. If you trip and fall, you don't want to do that because you could get arrested. Or if you're walking too fast. I've seen people walking too fast. Sometimes, they just get arrested.
Well, you don't want to speed on Pacific Avenue. You got to be careful here. You're wearing your kind of, what is this, orange jumpsuit. You got handcuffs on. It looks like a rather attractive jailer. Let me take a quick...
I got the list just in case he does anything. I can report him so I know what all the fines are. Noise control.
So you were talking too loud. Were you urinating in public, sir?
I just wet myself and they got me for that.
I see. Well, I'm going to take a picture of you just for our record. And the costumes are coming thick and fast.
And that actually was a costume. I probably mentioned this before when I played this tape some weeks ago, or this part of the tape. This is a guy in an orange jumpsuit with a clown outfit on, and he actually looked exactly like the fellow in the advertisement that the city council put out saying clowning around could have serious consequences on Halloween. There are triple fine zones downtown. You know, the costume you show up in may not be the costume you end up the night in, meaning you may be arrested and put into an orange jumpsuit. So this guy was a spitting image of the don't clown around model that the city council used to put a little fear into people on Halloween. And since I have so much respect and regard for fear, after all, it's what makes the Bush regime go, I can understand that maybe the local Matthews-Rotkin City Council, I guess now it's the Riley-Coonerty City Council, we have a new mayor, Emily Riley, and a new vice mayor, Ryan Coonerty. They were elected on Tuesday from themselves, of course. Well, maybe that's something good. We have a caller coming in, and I believe I know who this caller is. This is going to be our special guest, Stephen Percy, calling in from perhaps from Berkeley. Let's see if we've got him on the air. Hi there. We hope you're on free radio.
Hello, Robert.
Is this Stephen?
Yes.
All right. Where are you calling from?
I'm in Berkeley.
You are in Berkeley?
Yep.
Okay. Well, welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you.
And it's been about a year since we've talked on the air.
Yes, it's been quite a while.
For those who don't know you, you are, I guess you're an attorney. Would you call yourself a performance artist or just a straight artist? Or explain yourself.
I call myself an attorney and a peace activist, and I guess sometimes I throw some political protest art into the picture, but only a couple of occasions actually drew a lot of controversy.
And indeed, there have been a couple. I mean, of course, you came to my attention not through what may be your normal art output or your normal legal work or even your normal peace activism, but through some high-profile activity that attracted the attention of a number of hostile critics, I guess one case involving, is it fair to call it an effigy of two soldiers?
Well, it was actually, that's why it became a controversy, is because that's what the right-wing media called it, because they wanted to generate some outrage within the community, and so they wanted to have to conjure up images in people's minds that what we had pinned up on our house was, you know, something akin to...
That you were attacking the soldiers.
Exactly.
Although, actually, I have no trouble attacking soldiers who are killing people in Iraq, frankly.
Ironically, today, I feel the same way. I would have had no problem. Today, I would have no problem having a display of a soldier, which, holds him out as a figure that's, you know, not very well liked in the Middle East.
Right. But in April, I guess it was March of 2005 of last year?
February 2005, exactly. Yes.
Right. You actually, on your Sacramento home, because you have a home in Sacramento, even though you're mostly in Berkeley? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have our first home was, we originally came from Sacramento, and when we moved to Berkeley, we kept that place. But we continue to visit, and we post our political messages there, and back then, we put the display of a soldier on the house with a sign. The first sign said, "Your tax dollars at work," and it showed the soldier being hung by the noose from underneath the eaves of the home. And needless to say, it drew some controversy.
In fact, it was torn down, right?
Yes, actually, it's several times it was torn down, and two of which were on live television while the...
And the DA refused to prosecute the people who tore it down.
That's right. The DA said that there was insufficient evidence that there was a vandalism or property damage, even though the video showed that the person climbed up and tore it down and stole it. He took off with it.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I guess you can't show that it was damaged since it's not there anymore to see, but that was the technicality.
And then you put it up a third time.
We've had six of those torn down.
Six torn. Is there still one up there in Sacramento, number seven?
Well, there was up until about a week ago or 2 weeks ago when we were there. We had a peace demonstration, and I used it for that. And when I came back home, I didn't put it right back up. It's kind of difficult to put it up each time. So.
And I know the second time you put it up, it said, what, Bush lied?
Bush lied, I died.
And did you use that same phrase for the other four, them effigies, representations?
Right. The four subsequent political displays, everyone since has pretty much said, Bush lied, I died.
Now, has the sentiment in Sacramento changed at all, or is there still the same sort of mindless allegiance to the Bush policies?
Let me just go back and say, actually, one of them says baby killer, and it's an Israeli soldier. It was something I made during the invasion of Lebanon when Israel was dropping, over a million cluster bombs, and killing civilians, mostly children, over 1,000 Lebanese civilians. And so I made a display of a soldier, but it was an Israeli soldier, and the sign said baby killer.
And what has been the reaction of the Sacramento community in the last year? We heard about it, of course, in 2005, but what about this year?
Well, actually, things have turned around quite a bit. Most people would drive by, give thumbs up, and, you know, usually nod, or it's usually a sign of approval in some way or another.
Any sympathy, copycat demonstrations?
Not with that particular form, but I've seen a lot of other things go up in the neighborhood relating to anti-war messages, even anti-Israel messages.
And this is a fairly well-to-do neighborhood?
They voted pretty blue in the last few elections. I guess they're mostly Democrats, but there are a few conservatives, and it's more of a upper middle class neighborhood in Sacramento.
You also, of course, had the famous flag in the toilet display at the State House painting, or
at the Department of Justice. Yeah, they had an art exhibition, and there was a painting there that I had. It was called "Tanks to Mr. Bush." It showed the star-spangled map of the U.S. going down the toilet. And that generated controversy. In both cases, with the soldier display and the painting, the one right-wing group in particular called Move America Forward organized vigils to protest our form of protest.
Yeah, I went to a couple of the right-wing blogs and was reading the. I guess somebody called your wife's, started giving out your wife's work number and encouraging people to encourage the boss to fire your wife. I've got conflicts about whether I regard that as a free speech protected activity or not, because I know we're doing a boycott here of a business called Lulu Carpenters, whose boss harasses homeless people, or has on several occasions done that. Mm-hmm. And we're encouraging people to go in and boycott the business and tell the owner what they think of that particular kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know that, you know.
I don't know if it didn't really make any difference in her case. The people who called, basically, I guess a lot of people don't want to annoy a large law firm too much because they might be afraid of the kind of response that they can get.
And your wife works for a law firm. She too is an attorney, right?
Right.
And I noticed you've been doing a lot of writing on counterpunch.org, which is a lefty website I regularly read.
Mm-hmm. And Dissident Voice.
Dissident Voice, which I read.
Information Clearinghouse.
Less frequently, but occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
What subjects have you been covering lately that you think are undercovered in the mainstream? Let's say the lefty media, because you're talking on lefty radio here, so you don't you don't need to convince us probably about the Iraq issue, or even I would probably say about Israeli-Palestinian politics. In other words, it's probably. I guess the concern I have is, how do we mobilize people to engage in acts of resistance when it looks like you're going to get this bland pullout in 5 years, or scale down the violence, withdraw somewhat, but stay around so you can come in and bomb whenever you want approach by the Hamilton-Baker Commission that's going to be coming out?
Mm-hmm. Well, one example would be, I just got an email today from Cindy Sheehan, who is going to be back in Washington, D.C. In early December, when Nancy Pelosi will be, they're going to be holding a closed-door meeting with the Democratic contingent to discuss the war in Iraq. And Cindy's asking, basically calling for all activists throughout the country, or probably internationally, to come to Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, December 5th. She said they plan to be on the other side of that closed door, and they said, they want people to be at the Capitol by 11 a.m., and everyone's invited. Doesn't matter what the organization is, and they said it's time to kick that door in.
That sounds good, but of course, interestingly enough, this is the first I've heard of it, and I'm...
yeah, I just got it today. I have the, fortunately, I'm on her email list, because we have a close, we stay in close contact. She's been to a few peace demonstrations that we've held in Sacramento, and actually she lived with my wife and me for the last year.
So this could be, actually, people don't have to go to Washington. In fact, most of us can't afford to go to Washington for one reason or another.
No, but
could go to our local misrepresentative and demand that, you know, they take immediate action for defunding the Iraqi war, for instance.
Yeah, well, you know, if you think about it, in the past, even back, you know, back in the 60s when there were, in early 70s, when large gatherings of people would show up in Washington, D.C., a lot of those people were poor, and they, you know, I mean, or didn't have much money. They basically either ride-shared their way back there.
But not on a week's notice.
No. Well, no. Sometimes, though, I guess on a couple of occasions, something wonderful has happened. But
could happen.
That is rare. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking, I mean, people could show up at their local representative's office on that date. They could do campouts. They could do sleepouts. They could do sit-ins if they wanted.
Right. No doubt that there will be some kind of local application to this. I don't know how, you know, how well organized it is.
Are you going to Washington? Or are you going to work locally on this one?
Well, we're going to be locally. Actually, tomorrow we're going to be, or Sunday, this Sunday, we're holding an AIPAC protest in Sacramento at the Radisson Hotel.
And explain to listeners who don't know what AIPAC is.
AIPAC is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. They promote terrorism, militarism, occupation, disregard for human rights.
Now, wait a minute. The Israeli government is not on the U.S. enemy combatant list. How can you say that?
Well, that's because the AIPAC, the key lobby group that they've played a key role in creating support for the U.S. invasion of Iraq. They're a very powerful lobby, and they should be registered as a foreign lobby. In my opinion, they're an unlawful foreign lobby, and they actually should have no right to exist.
So I know I've heard protests being scheduled, mass protests in February.
Mm-hmm.
Pelosi, that's Nancy, no impeachment, thank you, Pelosi, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
As you know,
that's another thing that Cindy is really pressing, and one of the reasons she wants to be on the other side of that door. I think that she was very disappointed by the kinds of rhetoric that came out right after the election, and I think that there will be a lot of groups of people rising up within the next, you know, when Congress meets and begins their session in early January. I think that they're going to be quite surprised that there are a lot of people out there who don't like the kind of rhetoric that they've already been hearing.
What, you know, I mean, of course, they're going to have to get past the huge media blackout.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it can happen if people go to the streets. In Sacramento,
mm-hmm.
which is, of course, the seat of government in California, I guess there have been some moves to do things like, you know, stop the National Guard from going overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you anticipate or do you recommend any local actions in Sacramento to deal with what the state government can do? Or do you think that Arnie is not going to pay much attention?
Well, you know, actually, I really think that a lot of this goes back to AIPAC. I've been reading a book called The Power of Israel in the United States by Jim Petras. It's out on Clarity Press. And, you know, there's so many things that AIPAC is responsible for, so many aspects of U.S. militarism and the killing that's going on in the Middle East, the murder of civilians in Palestine and Lebanon. The Iraq war is really all, if you understand AIPAC's role in all of this and the history, it really becomes clear that this is a group that's substantially responsible for a lot of the problems that we're having. And I think that's a good place to start. There are actually going to be anti-AIPAC demonstrations in the Bay Area because they're also meeting in this area over the weekend, and I think Sunday or Monday in Santa Clara. But there's a site called Stop AIPAC. I think Stop AIPAC, their position is a little bit tame, but it's a good site to see where the demonstrations are going to be, including this one in Sacramento on Sunday from 10 to 1 at the Radisson Hotel, 500 Leisure Lane, Sacramento.
And for those two people who are listening or going to Sacramento, let me know what's happening when that. You'll be there, I guess.
I'll be there, and I think that we'll have. I think there will be, you know, probably in the hundreds out there, which is kind of unusual because it's a location where.
Do you follow right wing websites as well as left wing websites on the Iraqi war at all? Is there any one you read regularly?
Well, I run across some of them once in a while, and I just get disgusted and see something that sounds almost what I see on Fox News or CNN if I want to take a look at something there. But I generally don't. I tend to go with places like Democracy Now and your site and KPFA Radio. Berkeley.
You're in Berkeley and KPFA. We've had some concerns about KPFA in terms of its lack of internal democracy and staff rigidity and failure to provide local programming and lack of accessibility to labor programming. Have you been aware of this controversy? Reva Entine has been on the air talking about this. Have you got any position on that or anything you want to say about that?
I actually don't know enough about that because I'm not as familiar with the politics of the station. I actually tune in to listen to Democracy Now! And then tune out.
Yeah, for those who are interested, Democracy Now! Of course, it plays here on Free Radio at 8 o'clock. And I think it's either at noon or at 1 here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But you can also, for those who don't have time to listen to Democracy Now!, you can go to democracynow.org and you can read.
Mm-hmm.
Often, not always, but you can always read the headlines when they do a 10 or 12 minute summary of news stories that usually don't make the mainstream headlines.
Yeah,
and then you can also the longer interviews. Sometimes you can read a rush transcript, and sometimes you can't. But for those, I've been told, for example, by people who are very interested in Democracy Now! But don't have time to listen to the radio, I kind of advise them: you don't have to hear it; you can just read it. Because it's often quicker to just go to democracynow.org and read the actual news headline. So that's something people have an option to do.
Yeah, no, it's a great source of information. And I also go to Al Jazeera. I was kind of disappointed yesterday to see that they still haven't used the term civil war in Iraq, which I think most of the people I know have been using for nearly a year now.
But it looks like the latest wrinkle is the idea that if the U.S. withdraws, Saudi Arabia will intervene on behalf of the Sunnis. Have you seen that wrinkle?
Well, I've heard a lot of different descriptions of what might happen if the U.S. withdraws, and it seems like it's different in every scenario. Every time I hear somebody speculating differently, but
what's your speculation?
Well, I would speculate that if the U.S. left, first of all, I think that the violence would subside. Overall, I think that you'd still have some, obviously, but I really think that their presence is really pissing off a lot of people. But
most of the people killed every day are not the U.S. soldiers, or even, well, often it's police and agencies and so forth, but a lot of it now, more recently, are, as you pointed out, because of the word civil war, Sunni or Shia civilians, or who just happen to be, or religious figures.
Right. And a lot of that has to do with the sense from some people, from a lot of people, that there's this collaboration with the U.S. in various instances. And I think that just the mere presence creates this, and the interaction creates this appearance of impropriety to one group or another whenever it's publicized, and it's just, I think it's something that angers a lot of people over there, and it's really part of the big.
But wouldn't
big
the
problem.
Same claims be made if the U.S. were? I don't think they'd go, but they'd withdraw to bases maybe on the edges of Iraq, or they'll pull in their horns somewhat, and you'll have. I guess Democratic Party leaders in the last presidential election, were calling for a UN force or something like that, or maybe an Arab force.
And they were also calling for redeployment, which is outrageous, just as outrageous as far as I'm concerned.
Right, but I'm saying is, let's suppose there was we're talking still about trying to control, contain, and repress, but if you're talking about a different group of military forces doing it. Is this going to impact the Sunni-Shia civil war situation if we have, in fact, as you and probably I and most everybody, even NBC, thinks is a civil war. I mean, did the civil wars have to play themselves out? I mean, do you think that, I mean, some claim that this is going to lead to intervention by Iran and Saudi Arabia in a greater way, which might be better without the U.S. It might be worse. Some would say, I mean, we share the desire to have the U.S. out of there yesterday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the question is, realistically speaking, what's the likely outcome in your mind as you look at the situation if the U.S. leads? Are you actually realistically suggesting the violence between Sunnis and Shias is going to lessen? And if so, explain to me how that's going to happen.
Well, yes, I think it would lessen because I think that the U.S. presence and the interaction with the different representatives of Sunnis and Shias leaders is sufficient in itself to generate some outrage within the community that there's some and suspicion that there's some kind of collaboration, and that I think the people of Iraq don't want the idea that there's any collaboration, or most people in Iraq don't like the notion that there's some kind of collaboration going on.
I think we agree on that, but I mean, what about once the U.S. is gone? Is there, do you see things having kind of passed the point of no return in terms of, because of the blood that has been shed and because of the, you know, the history of, you know, Sunni dominance and under the Hussein's mm-hmm. murderous regime, you know, what do you see happening?
I think that it's, you know, I don't want to purport to
you're no prophet.
I don't want to be like, I mean, I think, you know, that's the big mistake that the Bush administration made. They purported to know what was going to happen. And I think it's really...
So your answer is you don't know.
I think it's unpredictable. I mean, we just have to admit that it's unpredictable. But if you're asking what I think is very likely regarding the violence, I think it's very likely that it would go down.
At least that aspect of it that's concerned mm-hmm. with U.S. collaboration.
Right, but I wouldn't want to purport to be able to predict what would happen ultimately, because I think that's the big mistake that the Bush administration made. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they just didn't care.
Well, I hear you there, but I mean, there are also people of goodwill mm-hmm. who believe that, you know, now that we're in there, we have to clean up the mess that we made. You know, this endless litany that you hear. And you know, some of it has to do with this boogeyman Iran that's been painted by the U.S., you know, by the Bush administration. But is there any historical reference point we can go back to look at prior civil wars? Obviously, every civil war is different. You know, one can imagine that. I mean, I don't have any. I'm not enough of a historian mm-hmm. to look at either the Iraqi situation specifically or civil war situations elsewhere in the world to see what happened when, you know, the imperialist power, whether it was British or French or U.S., mm-hmm. withdrew, or Dutch, and there was some kind of civil war. I don't recall a situation where a civil war raged for a long time mm-hmm. after an imperial power withdrew. But on the other hand, I don't remember a situation like Iraq where there was such a huge war going on at the time.
Well, I think Vietnam is still a pretty good example because, first of all, you did have, you know, a lot of people claiming back then that we shouldn't leave now, we shouldn't cut and run, we should finish the job. If we leave now, it's going to become chaos, and there was some chaos after we left, but then things calmed down, and I think that there was in effect at the time when we left, there was something of a civil war going on by that time. I think that even in South Vietnam, that one of the reasons that we failed there was because there were so many South Vietnamese people who were, driving up and blowing up the restaurant when we were sitting there, you know, having coffee or whatever. Mm-hmm. Things like that were happening. They were not all, you know, pro-U.S. in South Vietnam.
You don't anticipate, I'm giving you the right-wing nightmare scenario, things like a Cambodian genocide or the Kampuchean genocide happening over in Iraq, with the U.S. withdrawing?
I think that I just wouldn't want to try to predict, because it's really what's been the cause of a lot of problems with going in there in the first place.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's hard to predict. I raise these issues because I think people of goodwill who have very, very different views than I do raise these issues to me, and I have to confront them and either say, I don't know, like you do, or maybe I can point to some other historical cases or possibly some trends that are happening. Now, we're talking with Stephen Percy, who's an attorney and artist, is that correct, from Berkeley. What have you learned in the last year that you didn't know a year ago that you want to pass on to us, either about the war, about the situation in Berkeley and Sacramento politically, around international issues?
Actually, within the last year, I've learned quite a bit about the influence that the pro-Israeli lobby has upon U.S. policy, something that, you know, before last year, I had heard bits and pieces, but I've really found out a lot since the Walton Mearsheimer article came out, and now this other book by Jim Petras, and there are lots of other articles that have been posted since. So I think that now that message is starting to get out into the community, there might be some kind of hope for, not right away, but sometime in the future, soon, hopefully, that the Palestinian conflict can be, calmed somewhat. Maybe we can expect a withdrawal, Israeli withdrawal, and the pressure's on, that's for sure. But that's what I've learned a lot about that issue within the last year, and I think a lot of other people are as well.
So what are you going to be doing on December 5th? When Cindy Sheehan is at the door of the closed conference saying, let me in, and they say, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin.
Well, I don't know yet either. I just got that email today, and I've been forwarding it because she asked me to forward it. And I know her goal is to get a lot of people there, but you're right. There might be some collateral goal that's connected with that to hold events in various cities throughout the country that involve some sort of a solidarity event.
Yeah, I would invite people to go to Representative Farr's office here in Santa Cruz and demand that Farr commit himself to an immediate, I should think they should try to rescind the supplemental appropriation, but I don't know if that's possible, but certainly commit himself to immediately, to voting no on any further military funding whatsoever, not just the supplemental appropriation, but the major military appropriation, which probably doesn't come up for a year anyway, for all I know.
Right.
So it's really hard, to pin these slimy guys down. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking for an issue that we can get. Any suggestions on an issue we can propose to congressional representatives in California that we he'll say, oh, I want a timetable for withdrawal. What do you say to that? Except, no, we don't want a timetable. We want them to leave 30 to 60 days, like under the, what was the amendment that was passed? The Hatfield, was it the McGovern-Hatfield Amendment? It's the amendment that requires the president to withdraw troops. It's not used, of course. It's been ignored since the 70s by president after president. You know what I'm talking about? There's a war amendment which requires
I've heard about it, but I'm not really familiar with that.
Requires the president to within 10 days or 30 days either get authorization from Congress or withdraw troops if he's used them. And maybe that's what we should try to invoke in this situation. Although I think somebody tried to invoke it against Carter way back in the 70s and failed, but it could be tried again.
Yeah, and I think also the impeachment proceedings, well, at least, start going back to the issue of the Downing Street memo. It's sort of something that we...
Wait a minute. House Judiciary Committee Chair John Conyers, or soon to be, has assured us there will be no impeachment proceedings.
Well, he's going to be dealing with a lot of angry people who demand otherwise come January or even December. So I think that there still might be a realistic possibility of something like that.
You have a blog, do you not, Stephen?
Yes, Corruption Exposer.
Corruption Exposer.
.blogspot.com.
Corruption Exposer. .blogspot.com.
Corruption Exposer. It's all one word. EXPOSER.
Gotcha.
www.blogspot.com.
And people can get more information probably on the Cindy Sheehan protest and anything else that you're cooking up in Sacramento and Berkeley?
Yep, I've got the event announced there. And every time we hold an anti-war event, we've actually, my wife and I have organized 23 in Sacramento since a year ago last summer. So
good for you.
And we've had several hundred people show up at each event, and we've had Cindy out there three times, in which case we get about twice as many people. So every time we announce an event, we put it there. And we also announce things on the indie media, indie bay sites,
uh-huh,
on the calendars. And our event this Sunday is on those calendars right now as well.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call in, and I
sure
encourage you to call in. You can call in on any of my shows if you've got breaking news, or if you want to comment on ongoing stuff. Just feel free to call in between 6 and 8 on Thursday evenings, or 9:30 and 1 in the afternoon on Sunday mornings. Just do it again.
That sounds great. Okay, well, thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Okay,
bye-bye. And that was Stephen Percy, activist from Berkeley, attorney and artist. You can, if you Google for Stephen Percy, I think it's V-E-N-P-E-A-R-C-Y, you'll find a lot of information and a lot of controversy that he's created by a number of public protests. And it depresses me to see the small number of people that come to these things, but I don't know. Anti-war protests against Vietnam started small in the 64 and 65 and grew. And actually, I don't think it's going to be any war protest in the U.S. is going to throw the U.S. out. I think it's going to be the people of Iraq that are going to do it, and sooner rather than later. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't try and do it here, too. If you want to comment on anything you've heard, or you've got some thoughts of your own, or you want to turn the microscope or telescope or whatever back to Santa Cruz, give a call, 427-3772. Still in the studio with me is Weta, who has been talking earlier about the issue of child custody, homelessness, and any thoughts on what you've heard from Stephen?
No, I'm just learning to get involved.
All right. And while you're doing some pondering on this, all you folks out there, if you're listening, those of you who are listening, I'm going to play a little more from Halloween and Halloween on the Streets in Santa Cruz. But first, we have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, it's Madison. I was in SAC in the last Bush War. What was that, 90?
Uh-huh.
And I was driving by Percy's house, and he had those things out there, and somebody had knocked them over.
This was...
And I whipped around my 4x, and I said, what is that? They're knocking the art. And he said this and that, and I gave him all his information on public art, but it was a cool sign.
This was.
I'm glad he's still out there.
This was in what city?
That was in Sacramento back at the last Bush gig.
You mean you're talking about in 1990 or 91?
Yeah, that what was it, the 89 war? When they started in 89?
90, 91, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, well, that's
anyway,
interesting.
But it's good he's out there, you know? Did you go to city council? I forgot.
Did I go to city council? Yeah, I did. I did.
Yeah, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to see the lady stick the bush head in the bush.
No, we went and
get
we...
Get elected.
And I'll be playing some of that on the air probably on Sunday, but
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Madison. And, well, there's at least one person who's listening, and thanks for the call in. Again, getting back to those Halloween days, and until, of course, we hear from you now, in which case we'll stop and talk with you.
Another George Bush. I've seen many Bushes. Excuse me. George, what's happening tonight?
Huh?
Do you have any comments for your public?
No comment.
He's got no comment at this time. It sounds like George Bush. So what are you, sir?
Okami.
And you're what?
Okami for the PS2.
Now we're talking to you. You're talking to an ignorant man. Explain that to our audience.
It's a video game where you play as a white wolf.
I see. And are you alive, or are you simply a figment of my imagination?
I am indeed alive.
Excellent. Well, thank you for reassuring me.
Awesome.
All right. And we have individuals in various uniforms, some partial costumes, some full, mostly people out of costume. And are you a pumpkin head?
I am a pumpkin head.
You are a pumpkin. And what are you?
I'm a bumblebee.
You are a bumblebee with a yellow turban lit up with...
It's a beehive.
Indeed it is, I must say, with a beehive outfit.
right now. You look like you're surrounded by a boxer. Just what exactly are you?
A meter maid.
You are a meter maid. And you just marked my shoe. I will say no more. I'm moving right along here. Yeah. And what are you two? What are you?
I'm David Bowie.
And you?
D'Artagnan. I'm a musketeer.
D'Artagnan, take care of Bowie. Make sure he doesn't get out of line.
I will try my best.
All
thank
right.
you very much.
Thank you. And what are you tonight?
Huh?
What are you?
I'm a producer.
And what are you tonight?
Sorry. I'm arresting him.
Okay, you're under arrest. Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. Would you like some candy before you go to jail?
Thank you.
Thank you. There you go. Again, spotlight here at, gosh, what is it? Lincoln Street is well designed to blind those of us walking by so the police can keep a good look at us.
I can have them?
You may. One, please.
Thanks.
And you took three.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Senor. Senor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Viva Oaxaca.
Yes, please.
All right, then.
Oh.
All right, now beware your teeth. You want to be very careful.
I would love
to. I'll floss tonight.
I'm working for the dentist. I got to warn you.
I'll floss tonight. I floss every day.
You promise to floss?
I promise.
What are
floss?
You promise to floss.
I'm partly cloudy chance of showers. Get it?
I see. You have a squirt gun and a rather light, fashionable outfit. Who is this aviator with you? Your name, sir?
Howard Hughes.
And Howard, are you going to buy me dinner with your millions or what?
I'm too crazy for that.
Fair enough. Well, do something about the country. It can't get any crazier.
Thank you.
Happy Halloween. Thank you.
Thank you. And, sir, what are you?
I'm a surgeon.
And can you perform an operation here in public with all these lights?
What do you need? What do you need?
I'm thinking of maybe getting rid of, operating some of these officers, seeing if perhaps we can find out what makes them tick.
Well, maybe we should check it out. Look at them. Look at them. What do you got? What do you got? You got some stuff? You got some utensils for me?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to rely on your own skills and ability.
Just going to have to cut them up or what?
No. That would be criminal, but maybe an enema might be helpful here. Or possibly
one of those in there.
Why don't you have a lollipop and think about that?
I'm out of chocolate.
If you'd like.
Thanks.
All right. And there's a sign that says Courageous Pirate and a man with a tricorn hat as I wander up the street. And the costumes are coming thick and fast. You, sir, what exactly are you? You are in red. What does this mean? Is this some diabolic plot?
Absolutely.
Thank you. You, sir?
I am the Kabuki Cowardly Lion.
Kabuki and Cowardly? Isn't that trying to grab two traditions with one blow?
That's great. That's correct.
Well, roar on, Mr.
Okay,
Kabuki.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Abraham Lincoln in shorts. There's a... sir, just exactly what are you? A strong, silent type, it appears. Andy?
No, thank you.
And what are you, sir?
I am God's gift to women.
Aha. You have a box that's to God from women, and you have... is there anything under that box?
I'm leaving that up to the public's discretion. They can make their own decisions about that. If they know me, they'll realize what kind of an undergarment I'm wearing, if any.
Would you like a lollipop?
You know, I am fantastic on that, sir. But thank you for the interview.
Well, smoke on, sir.
I will. Indeed.
Thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
What are you, sir?
No,
he shakes his head. And what are you?
Yes.
I'm a ninja.
And have you had any cause to use your ninja skills tonight?
Not yet. I just got here. All right, keep... to snatch a candy.
Well, that's all right.
What's this for?
This is just for the general public.
Awesome. Happy Halloween.
And same to you. Candy?
Thank you anyway. Thank you, though.
What are you? What exactly are you?
I'm a creepster.
Say it again.
A creepster.
And what is that?
It's a guy that's really creepy and old.
I see. Would you like a candy to go with your outfit?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Certainly. And are you getting cold in that outfit?
No.
What are you?
I'm a flag girl.
Fair enough. And you, sir?
Grandma.
Or ma'am, as the case may be.
Excuse me, I'm Jamie Galpert. Are you the fucking pervert who's perving on these chicks right here?
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. How are you?
So-so.
So-so. Somebody eat the mic to my face.
Andy?
We're all of
the Tootsie Roll, because we know that one.
And the folks are getting a little drunker. As you can see, it's about 9:35. Various festivities are erupting here and there. And indeed, the people do outnumber the police, which is reassuring. Madam, what are you?
Huh?
What are you dressed as?
Poison Ivy from Batman.
Does it itch?
Huh?
Does it itch?
No.
All right. Candy? Down here we have Scott Graham. You're not in that. What is your costume? Who are you disguised as?
I am disguised as a mild-mannered reporter.
I see. You have your camera with you.
Yes.
What do you observe tonight? Do you find this less or more festive than last year?
Last year I never made it downtown. I was having a small party at my house.
Three of your buxom friends?
Yes. That was the...
Can I?
Yeah. It was actually two, but... So I like attempted to get out of my house a couple times, I never made it the two blocks from my house to downtown, so I have no idea what last year was like.
You fool, you. Now, last year there was a mesh in the middle of the street blocking half the street off. This year it's improved somewhat.
Well, I thought that they did that last year at New Year's, not at Halloween.
You may be right.
Yeah, New Year's, they had the barricades up.
And actually, I wasn't around for New Year's, but they also certainly did it at Halloween, just a factual correction. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me is Weta, and we have about 15 minutes left in the show in case you want to call in and have any comments. Did your Halloween go well? Any problems with the police? Did you enjoy the police protection that was provided by the circling helicopter, the searchlights, and the roving teams of 6 to 8 armed officers with I don't want to say it was riot gear, but it looked kind of in that direction. I don't know if they had shields at that point, but they did have truncheons, and they prevented me from observing an arrest of a person who was quite peaceful, constantly blocking my view, and that, I played that on an earlier show. If you're interested in hearing any of that, you can go to the archive at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org, and click on the name of this show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Weta.
Hey, Robert. It's Madison.
Madison,
I
hello.
I wanted to remind you about the rape report meeting that's coming up.
Oh, you have a rape report, yes. When is that happening?
The Women's Commission on Nonviolence, and I believe it's December 1st at 7 at City Council, down at the Chambers.
You're talking
City
about
Hall.
The Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, you mean?
Yeah, and they have the special rape report because we've had a 1,200% increase since
right.
1985, and they already have a typo in the report.
Okay, I know that's okay.
Like 3 years ago, we had 85. Last year, the report said there were 230, and the number one violators are local white men between 19 and 25, and the Viagra crowd, 35 to 45.
Now, Madison, where can people actually, other than, of course, hearing it from you, and then some may regard you as quite reliable, others may regard you as off your nut, where can they get information that, you know, they can get to confirm this these claims?
They regarded John Lennon as off his nuts, so I'm proud of that.
I understand. But where can they get confirming information on this?
Women's Commission of Nonviolence at City Hall. You call down there, and they have a commission secretary, and she has the report.
Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. It actually may be online. I'm not sure. Why don't you
yeah,
check on
you
that, Madison, see if it's online, and maybe you can refer us to it.
In relation to Halloween with our block, because we have one of the most vicious blocks that we used to until now we have one of the safe ones.
You're talking about the Maple Street block between, Center Street and Chester and
the FBI
Cedar?
Drug dealing program off our block.
Yes.
We finally got safety here, but I dispatched last year and warned them the gang was coming, and I called them again. And I called the cops 6 times and told them they'd come right past the police station, right down past Loudon Nelson and right down Maple Street. And why there's nobody down here to greet the little monsters before they knife each other is beyond me.
Right, but there were no knifings on your street this Halloween, right?
No, I warned them, and by the time they got down there, they knifed them over at the Metro.
Okie doke. Well, let's...
So that, I mean, Metro kind of is Maple because that's the used to be Maple that they closed.
All right,
they
well,
built the buses.
Thank you for the update, and...
Have
let us
day.
Sure,
okay,
and give
bye.
Us a report on December 1st. You know, you're always going to have some things breaking out in large crowds of people. Sometimes you get some violence. It happens. The idea that you want to intimidate everybody with massive police presence, I think, is just a no-win solution that leads completely in the wrong direction. That's always been my thought on this. But let's hear some more of that of the Halloween scene, and again, join Scott Graham in this interview I had with him on Halloween.
which created these pinch points where all the crowd had to get single file to go from one end of downtown to the other.
It was purely a safety measure, I can assure you.
Well, I think it caused problems. I think that's why it's not happening now. And as far as, you know, this whole overreaction of the city council of making these triple fine areas downtown for tonight only, they didn't deal with the problem that existed last year, which was the Santa Cruz gang had a fight with the Watsonville gang. They never, as far as I know, ever instructed the Santa Cruz police to work with the Watsonville police and to work with the county anti-gang task force and make sure that the same thing wouldn't happen again this year. Instead, they decided to, like, oh, let's penalize everybody, but we'll make double fines for drinking and stuff like that. But I don't know if they made
triple fine.
Okay, I don't know if they made a triple fine or triple punishment for stabbings.
They can't do that. It's a state code.
So is being drunk in public.
Hey, hope you're late tonight.
Right, although I think there is a municipal code about being drunk in public, too. I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, but still, it's like the real problem that they were reacting to, they took no action on.
You know, you're talking about our mayor, Candy, sir. You know, I really resent these kind of implications. You know, can you... Why aren't you running for city council if you know so much?
Probably because I would never get elected.
Well, I won't contradict you there. With the kind of views you have, I think no more need be said. Sure. Any other comments?
Not at the moment. I got to take some more pictures.
Please. Well, we're talking to the devil. Your name, sir?
Beelzebub.
And you are? Harris. And what's the story? Why are you hanging out with the devil? Seeing what angles the devil plays. I see. Now, what have you observed tonight? Has he been able to hit on any of the sexual targets of opportunity?
It's all the same old, you know, tried and tried over and over. Sometimes they fall for it, sometimes they don't. More often than not, they do.
That's the joy of
same old devil angles as it's always been.
No, you...
Tonight is my night.
I'm left speechless here. I'm going to retire.
Tonight is my night. Look around. All of my minions are here.
Indeed. And all of your womenions, too.
Well, womenings and dominions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Diablo.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
I'll see you later.
What are you fishing for here, madam?
Well, just some entertainment, really.
I see. So you're looking for a bite.
For a nibble? Not necessarily. I didn't put anything too tempting on the end of the line.
You want to nibble or be nibbled?
I don't know. maybe both, but only a certain type of fish, really.
Well, this sounds a little fishy to me. Would you like something to nibble on?
Sure. You know, I actually do like Tootsie Rolls.
You liar.
No, I said they were kind of a waste of time, but I still like something chocolate and chewy.
Keep that in mind, folks. You might get lucky tonight. So, Fisherwoman, what did you think of the don't clown around or get arrested ads that we saw on television and in the paper?
Well, I just saw the one in the paper, but I laughed so hard. I was like, what a joke. This is ridiculous. I, like, showed people it. I thought it was so funny. But, yeah, it didn't stop me from coming downtown. I wasn't too scared to come and enjoy myself and stuff.
Okay, your name?
Anne Sally.
Thanks, Anne.
Yeah.
No triple fines for you tonight, hopefully.
Okay, cool.
And the evening is a little brisk, but we have some women here who are scantily clad, wearing angel hat, bunny ears, and horns. We have crowds in motion on the street, not slowing down, and the sidewalks, again, relatively clear. Grab a few here and see just what is going on. Well, Logos is still open. What are you dressed as? Who are you, in fact?
I am the Queen of the Emerald City.
And you are, in fact, Osmania, so to speak?
Yes.
And what do you find observing the scene? Are your subjects treating you properly?
They're
They're quite wonderful, in fact.
Yes?
Yes, my subjects are.
And what about, is this your first Halloween here in Santa Cruz?
No, it's my 24th as Queen of the Costume Shop Closet Capers.
Whoa, so you were here last year?
Yeah.
How does it compare with last year?
It's fine. I don't mind the extra lights. I don't mind the extra security. I think the lights enhance the scene.
Just don't try to stare on them too directly.
Well, no. Okay.
Thank you, Osmania.
Enjoy.
And you too. So what are you tonight?
Thank you.
Yes?
Candy.
You want candy, but what are you? What are you masquerading as, sir?
Schizophrenic.
Who?
I'm schizophrenic.
And what is that?
Who are you?
I'm Robert.
I'm schizophrenic.
You're schizophrenic? Schizophrenic? Why didn't you say so? Have some candy.
Why, thank you.
And you, sir, what kind of costume does this represent?
It represents Sid Vicious.
You are Sid Vicious,
yeah.
Or perhaps a reasonable facsimile thereof.
Yeah.
Round three. That says the sign passing by. Candy? What are you, sir? What does your costume represent?
Hey, old man, I want some candy.
Candy, little girl?
Yeah! I love candy from old men.
Where's my hug? Now, who are you two? What are your names?
Me, Nellie. Hi, I'm Angie.
And you're dressed in what? This is dancing girls, perhaps?
Yeah, like a ballet dancer, yeah.
And are you, in fact, dancers?
Yeah, of course.
Can you prove it? They are, in fact, able to shake their hips better than anybody probably I've seen on the street. Thank you. Thank you very much. And there's somebody in a blow-me tissue box. He got me a questionable well, there you are. And crossing Cathcart, the crowd extends further north past the Catalyst. So people, folks are dancing. Very few people I know, but that's fine. Lots of people of apparent Hispanic origin or mestizo origin. All right, sir, what are you?
Ghostbuster.
And how many ghosts have you busted tonight?
Approximately 7.
And in fact, what's been the response? Have you been, shall we say, given your proper compensation? Are you getting paid for this job?
Nah, they're free.
You're having a good time?
Yeah.
Any hassles from police?
No.
You look a little too happy. Try to be more sad in the future.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're wrong. Yeah.
So, I see there's some convicts. Perhaps you should arrest them right there.
Yeah.
Arrest those convicts, too. So, standing up here in the median, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Goodness. Maybe even more police officers in front of the Catalyst on the median as I wander up and down. Police officer that mock police officer I just talked to has "War is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength" written on the back of his uniform. Truth in advertising, I suppose. And I've been walking around, of course, with a dish of candy, which I've replenished twice. It's a candy dish with a hand coming out of it. Caramba! Qué cosa!
Thank you.
What are you?
I'm a wizard.
You are a wizard. Your head is where your chest would normally be, and your...
What's that? Saying? You're putting the microphone in the wrong place.
Wait, oh, good. Here.
Very true, but I'm working at it. Thank you.
Okay, you are.
Costumes are getting more outrageous and detailed and baroque. Here's somebody as a Harvest Dairy Farm milk carton, or wearing at least a hat that looks that way, or perhaps a mask or a head covering. That's quite a bust you have there.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. The free breathalyzer test box, the gorilla guy, the skier without the skis, for heaven's sakes. Candy?
No, thank you.
Candy?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And a number of people in fatigues. I've seen five or six more pirates, I would say. Bumblebees, pirates. Questionable fellow in blue and red. Now, just what are you, sir?
Captain America.
And Captain America, when are you going to resolve the mess in Iraq?
Oh, God. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I have plenty of intergalactic battles to fight first.
Maybe you should take President Bush over there and have him negotiate.
I could do that. I could do that. I could just pull the cord right now if I needed to. I have that authority.
Come up with your shield.
I could do that, except I left it at home.
You left your shield at home.
But, yeah.
What a pity. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would you like some candy, America?
Cool.
All right, then.
Not cool.
Watch out, or I may give you the finger. Your name, sir?
Nomad.
And what exactly are you doing here tonight?
Exercising my right to freely assemble and dressing up and having a good time.
I'm sorry, sir. That Insurrection Act of October 17, 2006 has severely limited your right to assemble, as well as your right to a writ of habeas corpus, to be free from cruel and unnatural punishment, and to right to be detained without trial. So you'll come with me, sir.
I actually realize that, and that's why I'm down here.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, why are you wearing that foolish Islamic mask? Don't you realize you could be mistaken for a terrorist? You and your jihadist friend here?
Yeah, that's
probably
true.
We have more fear of the terrorists in our government behind the White House. And
sedition in the streets! Didn't you hear our president talking yesterday?
Unfortunately.
The Democrats want us to lose in Iraq. We want victory! Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
We actually want to surrender, yeah, so I guess, you know.
Goodness, yeah. So how does the crowd look to you tonight?
It's bigger than I expected with the terror media campaign that the city put out.
They can't afford budgets for homeless people to go to and from the shelters. They can't afford their buses, but yet they can spend $30,000 on police officers and thousands upon thousands of more dollars on Comedy Central TV and all these other places. It's not clearly for.
The helicopters flying overhead with floodlights. That's pretty interesting.
An hour for the helicopters. You know, it's geared towards you and me and the average person living here and homeowners. It's not geared towards gang members. Like they said, the isolated violence last year was really from that. I don't buy it. We were here last year for 5 hours, and I didn't see a single violent thing.
Now, do you feel you see more police presence here than last year?
Actually, surprisingly, I don't see as many as I expected. They made it sound out like it was going to be like this huge army of police, and we just came down here recently, so we haven't been down here for too long, but I didn't see as many as I expected.
I have seen one arrest, and the highway patrol pushed us back, and it was obviously non-violent, non-drunk guy. I wasn't sure what they were arresting him for.
And that was Halloween this year. Just a couple of quick notes before I take off. The Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women actually will be meeting December 6th, Wednesday, 6:45 p.m. That's their next regularly scheduled meeting. So there may be a meeting tomorrow, December 1st, that Madison talks about. But if so, I'm not sure when and where it is. Perhaps she can call into Free Radio and announce it at some point. She gets more specific information. Regarding my earlier interview with Weta, why, one caller asked, did I do it? Well, apparently, one of the reasons she lost her child was because of the claim that there was a homeless situation, and also she was in need of some kind of legal help. And it seemed to me to be an example of the kind of a combination of predatory factors, an attorney who took all her money and so forth and so on. Haven't got time to talk about it more. Hopefully, we'll have more time on Sunday. So I'll be back. Hope you're back, too. That's 9:30 on Sunday morning. Be there, and I'll be there, too. Thanks for being with me in this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Please tune in now for From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis, with perhaps some Earth First updates.
Yep, we have an Earth First update.
Excellent. Have you been arrested yet under the Animal Terrorism Act?
Haven't tried.
Oh, well, we're going to try to make sure that happens sometime in the near future, Dennis.
I don't terrorize animals myself.
Well, anyway, Dennis will give you all the details in the next 3 hours. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadside.
And if you're listening on headphones, you know that sound is moving back and forth. Little post-production magic there from Led Zeppelin. I'm Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1. And we will, of course, be playing From the Cream to the Dregs tonight, our musical exploration of the 60s and the